Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Noguera are our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ishmael Darrow, Vesta Godars, and Carl Marxer. And to our camera crew, John Randolph, Karen Meadows, Anna Osbeck, and Matt Ely. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Spent most of my life in prison.
Criminal records can prevent individuals from moving forward with their lives, particularly with employment and housing. Tune in to Prison Pipeline as we discuss how to get your criminal record expunged.
Join us on Prison Pipeline, May 27th at 6:30 p.m.
Now I'm free. Now I'm free.
KVOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of My Story, My Superpower storytelling show on Wednesday, May 29th at 7 p.m. at the Intel Hawthorne Farm Campus in Hillsboro. My Story, My Superpower features 10 storytellers who will share their stories of courage, hope, and resilience to raise the awareness of mental health as an integral part of individual, organizational, and community wellness. Again, that's My Story, My Superpower storytelling show on Wednesday, May 29th at 7 p.m. at the Intel Hawthorne Farm Campus, 5200 Northeast Ilum Young Parkway in Hillsboro. More information can be found at kvoo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland, and More Talk Radio is up next with guest host Linda Olson Olstold, and then she'll be talking about war and Iran, and she'll be taking your phone calls. The number for the air room is 503-231-8187, and More Talk Radio is coming up now.
While digesting Reader's Digest in the back of the dirty bookstore, plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on my window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio. This is Linda Olson Osterlund. I'm your guest host for More Talk Radio. Cecil and Celeste are off this morning. I'm hoping there's an audience out there. I mean, I know you're always out there when I sit here in this air room, but it's a holiday, and the streets are very, very quiet on this wonderful morning. And so I don't know if you're out there, so I'm going to ask you to call in a lot today. I have no guest planned, and we're going to be talking about war, the anti-war movement, how many countries are we at war in, what does war really cost us. This is Memorial Day. We're supposed to be memorializing all of the people who've died in the American wars, and usually we call this only for U.S. soldiers, but I'll say if we're going to memorialize the wars of the United States, then we should talk about all of the people who died in all of our wars, both killed by us and killed by the so-called enemy. I'm definitely anti-war, so my position is right out there. And I want to hear from you about the kinds of things you are feeling and experiencing about the wars we're in right now. We, as a matter of fact, at least as of a month ago, we were bombing 9 countries. I can go into more detail as we go on about that. And we have bases in something like 800 separate bases. And that compares to 40 total military bases of that sort around the world by other countries. So we're like way disproportionate. We also are facing incredible budget cuts in all sorts of social services. Now, that doesn't seem like that's the cost of war, but that is the cost of war. Our taxes are being used to wage war and keep us at home rallying around the flag and not questioning the use of our dollars. We will be taking your calls. I want to give you that phone number again. It's 503-231-8187. I'd like to hear from you today about war. You know, my own thinking about this is I've always tried to avoid the Memorial Day hoopla because I came of age in the Vietnam War period, and I was an anti-war activist, and I never felt good about U.S. wars. And as I grew older and I started learning about, you know, was it possible that we actually knew that the Japanese were ready to surrender, but we went ahead and exploded two nuclear bombs to start the nuclear, start the nuclear war fest going on, and the race to get nuclear arms among other countries, as well as introducing a devastating weapon that our world should never have seen. So I grew up in that era, and while I didn't dislike our soldiers, and I was never one who said, you know, and I never heard of anyone actually in my anti-war movement that actually spit on returning Vietnam soldiers. But I will be honest, I met Vietnam soldiers who were returning, and they were not necessarily kind in their representation of, you know, the people of Vietnam and of what they did. I saw someone who had a jar of body parts that he brought back as a souvenir, and he showed me pictures of necklaces made out of Vietnamese people's ears. And I remember reading at the time that the life expectancy for a prostitute in Vietnam was 1.5 years because they ended up on the garbage piles around the bases, though many of them were murdered. And so that's where I came from about war, and I came from about American soldiers. So if you went to war for the United States and you did it thinking you were serving the United States, I respect that you thought you were, but I will argue with you that instead you were soldiers in opposition to peace, and you were used and abused by your own country. We do have a caller on the line, so let's go to him. It's John. Good morning, John.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to talk about the upcoming war in the Persian Gulf, specifically Iran. I heard last week that 10,000 troops were deployed and more are coming. Around this topic, way back when, before there was Monday Night Football, ABC had Monday Night at the movies. They made their own movies. And at this time, there was this movie called The Day After. And it had an all-star cast, you know, like Earthquake and all those others, you know, whatever. It was about a nuclear exchange between, you know, U.S. and the Soviet Union at that time. Well, the BBC had their own version, and it was called Threads. And, well, it seems like the English people, but you could say Germans and Russians, they have a little bit more, you know, upfront, you know, what do you call it, memory of war than actually.
Yes, they have, yeah, because we didn't have that warfare on our land.
Yeah, we had two oceans that, you know, helped us out. But anyway, Threads was sort of like, oh, I don't know, it had the glued the whole, you know, picture together. I mean, whatever. They had, you know, like, you know, family feuds and, you know, political, you know, upswings and stuff. But what was interesting, it was like on a NATO playbook. It had to be, because what it started in with a couple of oil tankers being sunk in the Persian Gulf, in the Gulf of Hormuz. And then on top of that, at the time, Soviet Union invaded Iran. So when it was, I mean,
what year was this?
This was like in the early 80s.
And so you're talking about the war that begun between Iran and Iraq?
No. This was even before that. I think it was probably maybe late 70s. But part of the reasons that Threads came out also was a protest of the experimenting of the cruise missiles up in Alberta and British Columbia.
Okay.
And so anyway, but see, it would the show would, you know, have the, you know, the meat of the plot, and then it would have a teletype, like a computer, you know,
running,
you know,
across the bottom.
I'd talk about, you know, what's going on, and it centered around this city called Sheffield, England, and it would tell the population, the industry, and a NATO air base.
I'm kind of missing what the point of this.
I'm just saying that since now we're getting really close to, you know, maybe reenacting
threatening war again with Iran. Yes.
Yeah, with this show called Threats, and it's going almost like by the playbook. That's all I'm trying to say.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the same old playbook that's been done before.
Yeah, the same old playbook and everything. So
yes.
Anyway, it was.
I thank you for bringing up the threat to go to Iran. That may be the most, a month ago I would have said Venezuela would have been the most likely place, and maybe 2 months before that I would have said North Korea. But now we'd say Iran because we've got an administration that wants to go to war. So thank you, John. We've got some more people on the line, so I'll just go ahead and go to you. The next one is Squirrel, line one. Oh, we lost Squirrel. We've got Camilo, line three.
Hi.
Good morning, Camilo.
Good morning. I just want to remind you that war is conducted other than by bombs, bullets, and boots on the ground. The sanctions that we are employing against numerous regimes, Venezuela included, as you mentioned, are equivalent to acts of war. They result in many deaths and unfortunate consequences for people. What is so ironic about this is that this really is contrary to our policy and our international engagement on the issue of trade and the movement of capital. We are for free trade, free movement of capital, not free movement of labor, unfortunately. But the fact is that global capitalism wouldn't have come about without United States intervention into world economy, and the sanctions policy is a contradiction of all of these essential ideas.
Well, and whether it is a I agree with you, it is a contradiction to that, but it's also just in itself, I think, it is a form of warfare. I agree with you. It's waging war. It's often one of the first or last steps we like to take before we end up going to war in terms of actual, you know, bombing, et cetera. And so, I think that is important to pay attention to.
Just wanted to add that contribution. Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank you, Camilo. The number is 503-231-8187. And go ahead and call in. We'd like to hear from you. Once again, that number is 503-231-8187. And we're talking about war today. And Camilo brought up the threat of war in Iran. And that's definitely, you know, the administration we have in now. So let's talk a little bit about it specifically with John Bolton as a senior advisor and Pompeo in his position. They are definitely warmongers. They have a history of wanting war. John Bolton, I would say, is one of the most aggressive, and enough so that the President Trump recently complained or joked. He didn't complain. Yeah, John would have us in four wars if he could. And we saw the attempt to get going in a warfare or a coup for Venezuela. And it's no surprise that the countries that we're threatening the most have power in ways we don't want. Venezuela has its own oil. We don't like that. And the state has part of the control of that. Iran has its own oil, and we don't like that as well. If you actually look at a map of the Middle East, Iran is surrounded by countries that are hostile and dominated by the U.S. One of its longest borders is with Afghanistan on one side. So I think the threat is not from them, but we saw us go into Venezuela. We saw us support Guaido. We saw Bolton openly talk about, and even the president openly talk about, wanting to get control or use of the oil that they have. And yet it failed because the people of Venezuela did not support a coup or an overturning of their government. That doesn't mean they're in favor of Maduro. I do have two personal friends who have friends living in Venezuela, and one who travels to Venezuela regularly for her job. And they say, as do the people who've been protesting about Venezuela, that the people of Venezuela, by and large, are not out in the streets. This view that we've been given is completely false. People have been just going about living their lives, by and large, the overwhelming majority. So that whole attempt fell apart, even with the threat of sending U.S. troops down there. And before that, there looked like there was some coming together of Trump's administration with North Korea, something that I would support. The people of South Korea and North Korea want to be reunited, and we are the main stumbling block in the way of that. Our amazing amounts of armory and troops there, and all of our missiles, etc. And so what happened with the last meeting in Vietnam? Bolton and Pompeo went along, and they gave North Korea new things. They said that they had to give up any chemical weapons that they might have, and one other kind of weaponry. I'm not remembering at this moment. It's not coming into my mind. So they changed the playing field. They stopped just talking about nuclear, and they went to include other things. I think that was clearly an attempt, and a successful attempt, by Pompeo and Bolton to stop the negotiations going forward, to actually trying to find some form of peace between North Korea and South Korea, us declaring our war with them over and allowing that reunification process to go forward. And then now, of course, we have Iran. And you know, Iran's been a favorite bugaboo off and on throughout the years. I did a show, you can look it up on the archives, just put in Linda Olson Osterlund, and you will find a whole list of my shows. But this one I did just a few months ago with Medea Benjamin from Code Pink, after she got back from Iran and wrote a book about Iran and what she had learned there. And from what I can tell, Code Pink is probably the biggest organization nationally that is actually opposing war. But it's clear that the threats and the reimposition of sanctions and the withdrawing from our nuclear deal with Iran has not made things better. And the threat of 124,000 ground troops being sent into the Iran and Iraq area, that's crazy. I just need to say that that's nuts, because, you know, a standing army of 25,000 in any nation is considered a very large army. 125,000 soldiers. What would that do to our economy here in the U.S.? How many neighbors and stuff would you send? And actually, the truth is that we don't wage war that way almost entirely anymore. I interviewed a man named William Arkin, a long-term journalist with the Washington Post and an expert on our military, and you know, he talked about the way that we wage war now, and it really is very different. Let me see if I can find you the way he talks about the way that we wage war today. He did point out that we're bombing in 9 countries. Oh, and I said I would get back to that, and I would give you the names of those countries, so I'll do that right now. I also want to once again throw out that phone number. You are our guest today. You, the listener. This is Community Radio. You're listening to KBOO More Talk Radio on a Monday morning, but it's not a normal Monday morning. It is Memorial Day. That means it's a holiday. That means I'm your guest substitute host. It also means it's a great chance for you. You're waking up. You've got your coffee. Maybe you're not doing that regular drive to work. Isn't that great? But that doesn't mean that you can't participate in our radio show. So we're asking you, we want to hear from you. You are you are the most important part of KBOO. You are a listener in our audience, and we're always trying to reach you. So I encourage you to pick up the phone and call. If you're new to calling in, just go ahead and do it. I'll be gentle. I won't be mean to you. The number is 503-231-8187. I want to hear what you think about what's going on with the move towards war. I also want to hear, you know, if you're just despairing about it, because let's be honest, where's our anti-war movement? Code Pink is the only one I can see that's waging it, and they're not getting much action in this town. And I'm not trying to disparage those individuals who are members of specifically anti-war or peace organizations, but we haven't seen you. Where are you? Are we refusing to come out when you call for us on actions? I don't know, but I know that when we tried to go to war in Iraq, there were over, you know, 1.5 million people around the nation. And downtown here in Portland, I believe, if I'm remembering right, we had almost 15,000 people demonstrating to say, no, we don't want to go to Iraq. Where are you now? I'm here. Where are you? I know you're out there. I'm not trying to put you down. Give us a call, 503-231-8187. Have you come to believe that these wars are necessary or that there's nothing you can do to stop it? That's one question I have for you. You know, I know sometimes I feel despairing like that. When was the last time you talked about Guantanamo? There's still people living there indefinitely. So I'm asking you to give us a call. Talk to us about war, your feelings about it, your activism, and what you think we should be doing as an active citizen in this country. We do have Lou on the line. Good morning, Lou.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad that you're awake and listening.
Well, some of us are very early working on projects or organizing stuff.
Yep.
Some of which at Portland City Council, in fact, have been about Venezuela and defending Maduro and critiquing Guaido.
Yay. Thank you guys for doing that.
Well, it was funny because there was a reporter from KBOO who came up and taped us afterwards saying, well, I thought you guys were talking about like old people's issues or domestic local stuff or TriMet. And so how do you see that there's a connection between Venezuela and local stuff? Well, in any left-wing country at different times in history, it helps for there to be international solidarity in general.
Absolutely. So you know, we have a lot of different KBOO reporters. I don't know if that audio made it onto our evening news.
Yeah, I don't know if it made onto the audio either. It was like a month ago. It was when Dan Che came back from Venezuela.
Yeah.
What I was going to ask was a couple things about. It sounds like more or less, and you can clarify, your critique of U.S. foreign policy is fairly similar to Chomsky, who was just on Amy's program?
Probably. I didn't hear him. I've been anti-imperialist since probably 68 or 69.
Right.
And nothing in the world has changed me from that. And by anti-imperialist, I mean I oppose the use of force, either economically or militarily, to dominate other nations around the world.
Right.
And I want to respect other nations' sovereignty and have others respect our own and work in peace to have trade and other kinds of projects that have to happen internationally and should.
Right. So as someone who's, in general, been opposed to U.S. foreign policy, say, at least since World War II, have you come across, you probably have, the phrase October surprise in terms of elections?
Yeah, and that's the phrase that's talking about false flags, the October surprise. Go ahead and tell us what you want to say about it.
No, I was just going to add two parts to this. One was just, do you think between Bolton, Pompeo, Trump, and Elliot, one of the Elliots who was around in Central America time.
Elliot Abram.
Right. That they're going to go for Iran or Venezuela before the election in a year, or you're not sure, you hope not, or...
I don't think they would not. I think they'll do what they think is most likely to succeed, and that they may have disputes between each other on that. I do believe there are rumors that that Trump is getting a little tired of looking like a fool. And so the whole falling apart of the Venezuela, the attempt for us to support that, and it's turning out now Guaido has probably got almost no support in Venezuela at all because he failed in everything that he said. The U.S. made, you know, a pretty strong attempt to get in there, and I noticed that U.S. media filmed the burning of some trucks on the border that Guaido said that, and the media reported that was Maduro's people who burned it, but later other videotapes showed that clearly it was Guaido's people that burned the supposed aid coming into the country. But for whatever reason, the U.S. was not willing to go further ahead. You know, when forces within the United States wanted to bomb Cuba and the Bay of Pigs, and they counted on Kennedy would be forced into a position of going ahead and sending more troops if something didn't work in that Bay of Pigs incursion, and Kennedy refused. It wasn't all that much longer before he was assassinated. I do think the two are at least connected in terms of motivation of getting him out. There were several other things, his seizing of the heads of the steel industry.
Right.
But, yeah.
Well, in general, I tend to be against conspiracy theories, but having seen JFK, Oliver Stone's movie, it seems like there are far too many things involved with JFK's assassination. I was also going to check on if you had happened to see, at Portland State, we have a film program, and we had 200 people come. It was the most popular film about a previous attempt by the U.S. to overthrow the Venezuelan government. It's called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
Oh, yeah. I try to get people to watch that. That, boy, that one blows
against
your mind.
Chavez. Right.
So The Revolution Will Not Be Televised was a foreign film crew, documentary film crew, who
from
were
Ireland.
In Venezuela and were wanting to film what was going on there under Hugo Chavez and the people's uprising, and happened to be there when there was the attempted coup. Well, they actually grabbed Chavez for and held him for over 24 hours. But the people of Venezuela rose up in their huge numbers in the streets, and we got to see it all in that wonderful film. Once again, that's The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. I really recommend people watch it.
It's by the Irish Film Board. And we had a woman who was from Venezuela and a chavista who gave us a copy of it. And then the chair of sociology at Portland State, Veronica, asked us to make like 10 copies to distribute.
That's so great.
The other thing I was going to ask you, though, in terms of the current national, you're talking about international stuff and war, among the Democratic field, there's now 20-odd candidates. Are there three main Democratic candidates, perhaps Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, or Elizabeth Warren, who you think stand out as, and can you even tell, on having a more progressive leftist foreign policy stance that you would prefer to
see? You know, I haven't studied their foreign policy stance enough. I have listened to it. I want to be careful about this. Of course, it's going to matter who you vote for when it comes, but there are all sorts of ways for the ruling parties and the Republicans or those who support Trump to stop an election from being successful against him, including all sorts of ways, if you listen to Greg Palast, of cheating on our voters and gerrymandering lines and all sorts of things. And I don't believe for a moment they will hesitate to pull out every stop they can as we go into 2020. I don't think that all of our answers rest in, in 2020 election, and then things are going to be better. As a matter of fact, I think we thought there was hope, or at least some of us did, in getting Obama elected. And all it did was take the left offline, while Obama never did anything that was, while Obama continued policies of imperialism, both in our immigration on our southern border, but also in the amazing expanse, you know, carried out and for him and by Clinton, of our drone warfare. And that's the kind of warfare that we do wage now, is warfare that's much more technical in its nature. It's much more using drones. Here's a quote from William Arkin about the kind of warfare that we're waging now. He's an expert on this. He's a Washington Post, a NBC, and the author of Top Secret, and a really important book. Anyway, here's what he has to say in an interview with Amy Goodman. He said, when the United States engages in warfare in the Middle East and parts of Africa as it does today, it does so in a certain way. Yes, it's true that there are special operation commandos on the ground, and they in fact get down into the dirt and into the mud with the people that they're fighting with. But by and large, the American military is highly technical, information dominant, dominated by aircraft, drones, space, and cyber. It is not necessarily the tool of warfare that we used to see. And I think because it is waged that way, because the media refuses to show us the aftermath of the bombing, say, we're doing in Syria and in Yemen, they're able to continue with their policy of waging war. But how many of us are going to see our Portland school budget cut? Or how many of us are going to see no food stamps for the people that are living on the streets? You know, right now, an adult male who's living on the streets is only qualified to get 3 months of food stamps for the whole year. We are treating our public like they are prisoners, like they are less than human, and yet we are spending billions and billions of dollars on warfare. Make sense of that one for me, please. And I'd like to have you call in and talk about this. Don't just listen to me. I do believe we have another anti-war song, though, and I think I'd like to have that put on. Can we do the Iris Dement song, please? I'm speaking when I do that. I'm speaking to our engineer, Heather, and asking her for that. And here we go. Thank you.
wasteland of the free. We got preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines, and their speech is growing increasingly unkind. And they say they are Christ's disciples, they don't look like Jesus to me. And it feels like I am living in the wasteland of the free. We got politicians running races on corporate cash. Now don't tell me they don't turn around and kiss them people's ass. You may call me old-fashioned, that don't fit my picture of a true democracy. It feels like I am living in the wasteland of the free. We got CEOs making 200 times the workers' pay. But they'll fight like hell against raising the minimum wage. If you don't like it, mister, they'll ship your job to some third world country across the sea. And it feels like I am living in the wasteland. Kids with guns fighting inner city wars. So what do? We put these little kids behind prison doors. We call ourselves the advanced civilization. That sounds like crap to me. Feels like I am living in the wasteland. We got high school kids running around in Calvin Klein and Guess, who cannot pass a sixth grade written test. But if you ask them, they can tell you the name of every crotch on MTV. Feels like I am living in the waste. We kill for oil, then we throw a party when we win. Some guy refuses to fight, we call that the sin. Yeah, he's standing up for what he believes in. That seems pretty damn American to me. It feels like I am living in the wasteland of the free.
This is Linda Olson Osterlund for KBOO. You're listening to More Talk Radio, and that was Iris DeMint, Living in the Wasteland of the Free. We're talking about war this morning, this Memorial Day morning. We do have Robbie on the line. Good morning,
Hi,
Robbie.
Good morning.
That's my daughter's name, so I thought maybe my daughter had called in, though she never would.
Robbie?
Yeah, Robbie. She was Roberta. I called her Robbie.
Oh, Roberta. Okay, yeah, I've never heard of a girl named Robbie. That'd be pretty cool.
I called her Robbly Dobbly. You know, you make up names for your kids when they're little.
That's what my mom calls me, too, actually. So. I wanted to bring up just how sad it is that people fall for the war is peace trick.
That war is what?
War is peace.
Yeah.
You know, straight out of 1984, you know, war is peace, ignorance is strength, freedom is slavery. This idea that I have a lot of friends who are very liberal, and I just feel so that I have a drinks the Democrat Kool-Aid so much. He was telling me the reason we were in Yemen was because they bombed Riyadh. And this is a guy who's supporting Joe Biden. And not that that makes any difference, but this is the Democrat, you know.
Yes, the traditional Democrat stance. They're not opposed to war. Those older Democrats there in senior positions, they're not opposed to war.
Right, right. But, you know, for some reason, we're sold this idea that the reason we have to go to Libya, you know, is because, you know, we need to make peace. The reason we're, you know, allowing Saudi Arabia to blow it up is because they need peace, so we need to go to war. And it's just so surprising that people can fall for that still time after time. With Venezuela, you know, that was another situation where my Democrat cousin said that the Venezuelan people needed democracy. So we need to go there and blow them up until they, you know, accept
democracy. Until they get democracy, right. Yeah, it's like killing all the people in Africa so that they can convert to Christianity.
Right. Right, and then we're going to hear from the Christians about how there's a Christian genocide going on in Africa where there's missionaries.
Right, or the Coptic Christians are you know, being persecuted, which may be true, but you know, like you said, you're right. Going to war does not bring peace.
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, I just really wanted to bring that up because it's really scary to see just how even, you know, people, you know, who claim to be part of the Democratic Party, you know, they're supporting, you know, the neoliberals right in the war and the war industry. Anyway, thank you very much for taking that.
You're welcome. You know, the phone number to call in and have yourself heard is 503-231-8187. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund, and you're listening to More Talk Radio. I do want to let you know what's coming up today. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour burrows down to the roots of the great issues of our times. I want to just say personally as a note, this is one of my very favorite shows. It's a variety show, and there's many different voices and different formats, interviews and discussions, but it's always something interesting, and they've been consistent through the years and bringing us those issues. At 10, it's Locus Focus, also a favorite of mine. Maybe I like a lot of KBOO shows. That could be it. But this is a really good one. It's our host, Barbara Bernstein, talks to activist and co-founder of the 350.org, Bill McKibben, about his new book, Falter. She was able to interview him when he was in town recently, and Barbara Bernstein is a tireless and great environmental reporter, and we're really appreciative of having her here at KBOO, so I recommend you just stay tuned to KBOO this morning at 11. It's going to be from WINGS, the Women's International News Gathering Service, a look at South Africa's efforts towards the traditional courts bill, which would allow chiefs of the former apartheid-established homelands to have legislative and executive and judicial powers. That's a pretty interesting topic. And then at 11:30, Voices for the Animals features an interview with Almira Tanner, core organizer with the grassroots animal rights network Direct Action Everywhere, and that they will fill us in on the upcoming Animal Liberation Conference in Berkeley. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member of KBOO, maybe you're listening to this even on your computer, go to kboo.org, or .fm, and click on Donate. There's a button in the upper right corner. It's red, a place to click, and you can become a member just like that. If you're a brand new listener, consider that for yourself, even just at the $5 a month level. Well, we've got another person on the line. Let's go to him. It's Dennis on line one. Good morning, Dennis.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, I wanted to just make a couple of comments about Iran. because it's so much in the news now. I actually lived there. I lived there for 3 years. This was back in the '70s. I lived there from 1970s to 73, with breaks for recuperating. I'll tell you, at the end of every year, we had to go and recuperate somewhere else. But it was a very interesting and very difficult situation. I was married the first year, and it was And my wife used to like to walk. She liked to walk down city streets.
Now, were you there during the Shah's regime, or had
I was?
Yes.
I was.
And so women were not wearing. I mean, it was an oppressive regime. The people overthrew it in the end, but women were not required to wear hijabs, etc. In that time, right?
That's correct. But I have to tell you something. She liked to walk down city streets when I was at work. Okay, so she would walk down city streets alone. Well, you don't do if you're a single woman. You don't do that. And there's a very good reason. You can imagine what the reason is. I wouldn't have to tell you. She was harassed. You know, she was just harassed by men. You know, because she was a woman walking alone, and they thought that she was, you know what. And so that's not good. That was our first experience with it. But anyway, the main thing I wanted to say is that my experience with the Iranian people. I mean, it was all very, very good. It really was. I had a good experience at the university. The students actually were against the Shah at that time. Things were rumbling that the anti-war movement was getting underway, and a lot of it was from students, and so I got a very good taste of that, and very good students. I have one student who came over to America. And got a PhD in mathematics, which is my field, and the Iranian people are great, are really fine people, and it's so terrible to hear things that are happening in Iran now. You know, I mean, the revolution has come. You know, and before the revolution, we were for the Shah, which was not a good thing, and I can see that.
You mean the U.S. government, was supporting the Shah and training his horrible police and oppressive things. In terms of Iran today, one of the things that I think is really apparent is that the more the United States threatens Iran, it strengthens the right wing or the more fundamental edge in Iran, so that the moderates and those calling for peace with the United States and wanting to have those kind of solutions get more and more put offline. And those, the majority of people who I believe who want to coexist in the large world without warfare and are not aggressive in wanting to dominate other countries, they get shouted down when the nation itself feels at threat. And when Trump says things like he's sending 124,000 troops to fight them, that strengthens the wrong side.
Yeah, it does, really. And it's really terrible. Like I say, I really love the people of Iran. My experience there was a very good one. I lived not only in Tehran, but in Shiraz, which is another city in the south. Same kind of experience. And that's mainly what I wanted to say. My love for the people there, and I hope that things get resolved. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
well,
all.
Thank you very much, Dennis, for your call. I want to let people know the number is 503-231-8187. You still got time to call and talk about your experience of what's going on as we have the threats of war in Iran really heating up right now. It seems to me like, as crazy as it is, that might be one of the things that actually goes forward into warfare. Iran is not an insubstantial country. It's a large country. It has a 4,000-year history, not as the nation Iran, but even longer as Persia. It's one of the main economic and cultural centers of the Middle East historically, long before we were even toddlers on our toes doing the Boston Tea Party. and their influence has been broad throughout the Middle East, and they have an army, and they will fight. There will not be an insurrection on behalf of supporting the United States. If you see that, it's probably going to be U.S. or also France and Britain like to have their claws in Iran as well, who are sending special ops or staging, as we've heard earlier, a caller talked about October surprises. Those are the surprises that come before a November election. Those are when warfare or something like that, threats to, quote, American security, are used as a way to rally the American people on behalf of the administration that's currently in power. That could happen. It can always happen because it happened, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin in Vietnam, and it happened in the Spanish-American War. I believe that was the sinking of the Maine. All of these are dummied up threats that are put on actually by the United States themselves to get you, the American public, to go along with their efforts at war. But as we're told, there is that we've got the best economy. Boy, our economy's going strong, and yet here in Portland and all around the nation, people can't find housing, even though there's 18,000 empty apartments built on speculation. They're too expensive for people to have housing. As we live in that situation, do you see the link between the increasing impoverishment of the American public and our waging war? I cannot imagine what even one day of 100,000 soldiers or even 10,000 soldiers would do. It would certainly feed the people of Oregon and of many other states. So give us a call and tell us what you think. We do have Sean on the line right now. Good morning, Sean.
Hi, this is John, actually, not Sean.
Oh, John. Okay, sorry.
The situation is pointing toward a war, and the war, you're covering part of the problem, but not all of it. One is, number one, Israel has great problems, and we are going to, I believe, go to war with Iran to protect Israel. Number two...
Do you feel Iran is an actual threat to Israel today? Or is that just something Israel wants?
Iran has been proceeding. First of all, you have the Shia-Sunni confrontation, and that's between Iran and they have great influence now in Iraq because Iraq has a Sunni population. You also have, there just is no right and wrong in this.
I don't know if there's a right and wrong, but I don't believe that there's any direct threat to Israel at all from Iran in the last period of time.
That's what all the guerrilla activity is about.
No, but that is indigenous to the Palestinian people. The Palestinian people do not like being occupied.
It's not just Palestine, it's Syria and Iraq.
But Iran didn't start any of those wars. I'm just going to push back a little on this. Iran didn't start that Syrian war, and Iran didn't start the bombing in Yemen against the Houthis. As a matter of fact, there was no real connection between the Houthis and Iran at all before.
Well, the point only is that Iran, as a Shia power, supports various kinds of guerrilla activities, okay? You may think that they're not actually...
Yeah, no, they may spend some money, you know, yeah, sure. Like we do with our troops around 800 bases.
They're not a threat to Israel in the sense of an existential threat, but in the case of Israel, they're attempting... I mean, what Israel's attempting to do probably is to take out the entire population of Palestinians, and they want to remove all the Palestinians. I think, you know, it's going to be very, very, very messy. And the United States has lined up with Israel and Saudi Arabia, and the question really only is whether the Russians will back the Iranians. But there will be a push, and there will be a war with Iran.
Do you believe
there
actually will go to warfare? Because it's going to be, there's no unmessy way to get through that. The people of Iran will not give up.
Well, with the people of Iran, it's not going to be a war like an invasion like Iraq. It's going to be just a techno war to knock
out. So you think that 124,000 was just something Trump threw out, not really recognizing the type of warfare we wage now?
Well, there'll be a lot of troops there, but they're not going to go into, they're not going to actually do a physical invasion of Iran. That would be crazy.
Yeah, it would be crazy, wouldn't it? I'm glad you say that.
But they will attempt to take out all the Iranian, capabilities of interfering. Main thing they want to do is prevent the Iranians from interfering with the flow of oil out of the Persian Gulf.
Well, and they aren't threatening that right now, are they?
Well, no, not yet, but they will be provoked. You know?
Well, you know, here's the problem with Iran. Iran allowed, and the Britain and U.S. and other forces had control of their oil in all real ways, and they built no refineries. So in Iran, they have a real problem because they can't just rely on their own oil to heat and use for all the uses of petroleum.
Well, people don't realize Iran was taken over in World War II.
Yeah.
Britain and Russia invaded.
Yeah, Russia was part of it too at some point. So I'm making is they're in a vulnerable situation in a certain way. Without having refineries, you're dependent on the global petroleum, whatever you want to call them, all the different players to send your oil to be refined somewhere else and then make it onto the market. And it makes very poor oil for their own energy needs. You know, my feeling about what you're saying is I understand that it probably will be in the interests, at least the expressed interests of Israel and Saudi Arabia, if there is a war waged by the U.S. against Iran. But that's the perceived, I don't believe that it actually benefits the people of Israel in any way to go into that war, and I don't believe that it benefits the people of Saudi Arabia either.
No, but the wars are not raised for the benefit.
Yeah, they sure are not, are they? I agree with you on that.
The wars are waged for very...
For imperialist reasons, domination of the economy and ongoing domination of the geography where the economy comes from.
So we will see. We'll see, but I don't.
You think it's going to go forward? Well, I really appreciate your point of view and what you're having to say. So thank you, John.
It's somewhat cynical, but
I understand. I think cynicism might be the right way to go here.
Take care now.
You too. Thank you. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund with More Talk Radio. We're talking about war, the various threats of war that have been coming out of our administration, and the wars that we're currently waging. You know, I had promised that I would tell you the countries we were bombing, at least in 2018, we were bombing these countries, and it would be Mali, Niger, Somalia, Libya, and Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. And Yemen. And there you go. 9 countries we were bombing in. Did you know it was that many? I didn't until I heard it with William Arkin saying it on Democracy Now! I thought I could probably name maybe 6. But I want to remind you that the expansion of our bases for drones and drone warfare and then small operations going in as opposed to troops, large troops, was really greatly expanded when Clinton was Secretary of State. That was a large part of her role. I'm opposed to Hillary Clinton as a candidate for president, but don't let me for one moment say she's not a competent imperialist. She is, in general, a competent imperialist. She traveled more days than the president or anyone else when Obama was in office, going to all these different countries, setting up and negotiating and getting us the drone bases and drone warfare and threatening other countries as well throughout the world. So she had a major role to play on that. If you love Hillary Clinton, you might think that's good, but I think it's kind of crazy that we have hundreds and hundreds of armed bases all around the nation, all around the world, when all of the other nations together only have 40 outside bases. So, we need to, I believe, find a way to organize ourselves and have unity enough to begin to oppose these wars. Code Pink has been doing some extraordinary work in supporting Venezuela and trying to oppose the attempts by the U.S. to go to war there. And as you may know, the Venezuela embassy was being occupied, and Code Pink has been supporting that. The occupation got taken over, but at the same time, Turkey made an agreement with the current Venezuelan government to step in and man the Venezuelan embassy here so that it will not be taken over by outside forces like Guaido, ones that Bolton or Pompeo support, it will be still friendly to Venezuela, and the Venezuelan, it's like, you know, taking care of it for them. Turkey has made that agreement with them. I hope that goes forward. It may be that the current push to go to war with Venezuela is over from some short period of time. It seems that Trump, though, is very desirous of having a war, and so we'll see what happens with that. I want to encourage you to call in. You still have a few minutes. It's 503-231-8187. Let us hear what you think about it. And what about the state of the state of our anti-war movement, maybe the absence of it? I do have one more song for you, though, and I think we'll go to that music right now.
Come get out of the way, boys, quick get out of the way. You'd better watch what you say, boys, better watch what you say. We've rammed in your harbor and tied to your port, and our pistols are hungry and our tempers are short. So bring your daughters around to the fore, of the world, boys, we're the cops of the world. We pick and choose as we please, boys, pick and choose as we please. You'd best get down on your knees, boys, best get down on your knees. We're hairy and horny and ready to shack, and we don't care if you're yellow or black. Just take off your clothes and lay down on your back, 'cause we're the cops of the world, boys, we're the cops of the world. Our boots are needing a shine, boys, boots are needing a shine. But our Coca-Cola is fine, boys, Coca-Cola is fine. We've got to protect all our citizens fair, so we'll send a battalion for everyone there. And maybe we'll leave in a couple of years, 'cause we're the cops of the world, boys, we're the cops of the world.
And that was Phil Oakes, and that was Cops of the World. Boy, he says it well. We do have another caller on the line. It's Dennis. We only have a few minutes, so jump in there, Dennis.
Okay. I just wanted to suggest on this Memorial Day for people that aren't already familiar with the book by Smedley Darlington Butler. It's actually a very quick read. You might even more appropriately call it a booklet. It's small, but he was the most highly decorated Marine general until his retirement. He had won the Congressional Medal of Honor twice.
Uh-huh, and go ahead. What was it you wanted to...
Oh, I thought I was on. Okay, because I kept...
Oh, wait, we're losing you. You're cutting out.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, so until his retirement, General Smedley Darlington Butler was the most decorated Marine general in American history. He won the Congressional Medal of Honor twice, and he was in the military for over 30 years, I think 33 years and some months. And he said that upon his retirement, it was then that he finally understood that he had not been fighting for democracy, but that he had been all along a hitman for corporate America. And then he detailed this, and I'm afraid, as the saying goes, history doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it rhymes. So the same thing keeps going on. So on Memorial Day, I'm kind of conflicted. I'm an Army brat. My father was in the military, and you know, so I got that kind of early imprint. But I look around and I see what our country does, and I feel for the young men who go and die. But sometimes I feel like all of us are just duped. All of us, you know, the soldiers, the people that support, and it's like we're living in some kind of very strange nightmare.
I think that's well said, and I really thank you for that. I really appreciate you calling in, Dennis, with that. And that's going to end our show. This is Linda Olson-Osterlund for KBOO Community Radio, and you've been listening to More Talk Radio. I want to thank all of our listeners and our callers, and I want to thank our engineer, Heather McCoy, for handling all those calls and getting us the music today. Next up will be Old Mole Variety Hour, and I'll let you go now.
While digesting Reader's Digest in the back of the dirty bookstore, a plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on my window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore.
Spent most of my life in prison.
Criminal records can prevent individuals from moving forward with their lives, particularly with employment and housing. Tune in to Prison Pipeline as we discuss how to get your criminal record expunged.
Join us on Prison Pipeline, May 27th at 6:30 p.m.
Now I'm free. Now I'm free.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of My Story, My Superpower Storytelling Show on Wednesday, May 29th at 7 p.m. at the Intel Hawthorne Farm Campus in Hillsboro. My Story, My Superpower features 10 storytellers who will share their stories of courage, hope, and resilience to raise the awareness of mental health as an integral part of individual, organizational, and community wellness. Again, that's My Story, My Superpower Storytelling Show on Wednesday, May 29th at 7 p.m. at the Intel Hawthorne Farm Campus, 5200 Northeast Ilum Young Parkway in Hillsboro. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.